episode of Inside SFPS. My name is Cody Donarski, Public Information Officer with Santa Fe Public Schools. And today I am joined by Miss Georgia Baca. Miss Baca, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks. So I'm really excited. It just came out a few days ago after recording this that you were named the new principal at Milagro Middle School.
Woohoo! I'm so excited.
Super exciting. How, when you found out that you were going to become the principal of Milagro, what was your first kind of reaction?
It was bittersweet. Mm. I mean, I've been at an elementary school, so I miss the junior high kids. I was just right away, even when I interviewed, starting to think of, if I get the job, what am I going to do? How am I going to, you know, go in there and get to know the school and the kids and the teachers. So even before I knew I had the job, I was already kind of thinking of things to implement when I got here.
Starting to plan ahead a little bit.
Absolutely.
And thinking it into existence.
Yep.
But this isn't your first time with middle school students, because you did spend a couple of years at Ortiz, right?
Yes, I was 2 years at Ortiz and loved every minute of it. I was athletic director, testing coordinator, in charge of some teachers. I did a lot, but I really fell in love with the age group because I came from an elementary school and I taught kindergarten. So I thought I was afraid of those older kids and I actually fell in love with them. So I'm excited.
I give credit to middle school teachers because that is, I know my middle school years were probably not my best years. So anyone that would put up with me during those years, I give them all the credit in the world.
Absolutely.
So let's start back a little bit further. So you grew up in Santa Fe, you're native here in Santa Fe, correct?
Yes.
And then did you go to SFPS?
I did. I was at Pinon Elementary School, went to Capshaw Junior High, then Capital. I was, when Capital opened, I was a freshman. So I was the first 4-year graduating class in 1992.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Super cool. Were you at Pinon? Was Miss Devotee there at that time?
No, she wasn't there.
Not yet?
Not okay. yet.
And then after Capital, you went to UNM. UNM. And was education what you had always wanted to do?
So actually, I wanted to be an ophthalmologist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was actually getting ready to apply to optometry school. And my parents had said, we'll give you money to apply for 5 schools and the rest is up to you. So I said, all right. But the more I thought about it, I had been with one of my colleagues. We had gone to schools to volunteer and I just fell in love with the kids. So I ended up telling my parents, I'm going to switch up. Like, I love these kids. And I was doing the ophthalmology for all of the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And so I changed and I ended up staying in school, getting my master's right away, and then started teaching here in Santa Fe.
Oh, wow. So were you already in, like, taking classes for that before you made the switch, or did you make the switch before you got to school?
No, I did it during. So I was getting my biology degree, and then I switched.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, pretty crazy.
That's awesome, though. And, you know, like you had mentioned, you know, you were getting that degree for all the wrong reasons. And I think everyone has kind of gone down that path. I mean, before middle of high school, I wanted to be a radiologist, but it was 100% for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And then, you know, time came and I'm where I'm at. But, you know, I definitely think a lot of people have been down this path before.
Yeah, it just wasn't in my heart. It wasn't my passion. And working with kids and volunteering, that's where I found that I was kind of at peace and actually excited to be in that place. So, yeah.
And then after you graduated, you got your master's, did you go right into a classroom or what happened in that transition between?
I did. I went right into a classroom. I was at Salazar Elementary School. Mm-hmm. Second grade was my first grade that I taught. And then, yeah, I stayed there for a couple of years and then I moved to La Goita Elementary School and I was there for 5 years. And from there, when they consolidated La Goita into Aspen, I left and I was an administrator at Sweeney and I was there for 5 years. And then from Sweeney, I went to Salazar for 2 years. I was a principal there. And then after Salazar, I went to Ortiz for 2 years. And since Ortiz, I've been at E.J. Martinez.
Where did you teach with Deputy Superintendent Romero?
I taught with her at La Goita Elementary School.
At La Goita. She told me a funny story. And if she's listening, I apologize for telling your story, but I think it's relevant.
I think I can tell it.
Is it?
I think. Well, go. Let me hear.
It was her first day teaching kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to get all the kids in a line and they didn't know. And she ran over to your classroom and she's like, oh, how do they get in the line? Whatever. And you're like, you got to teach them. But I think that's very interesting. And the reason I bring that up is because in kindergarten, that's such a unique, I mean, it's the first year in school. Most of these kids, if they didn't go to pre-K or, you know, they went to pre-K, kinder is the first real, like, super structured year of their schooling. And you have to teach them all those things. And I think that's really interesting. Can you talk a little bit about teaching kindergarten and what teaching 4 and 5 year olds like?
Absolutely. Back then when Miss Vanessa and I taught, Ms. Romero, my apologies, when we taught kindergarten, she had moved from second grade. And back then, preschool wasn't the thing here in Santa Fe Public Schools. If you did preschool, it was private. So when we'd get kids, it was their first experience. And she did come over to my class, but she didn't, she failed to tell you she had her hands in her hair. And she was like, how do I get them to line up? And I said, you have to teach them everything. So, you know, teaching 4 and 5 year olds, I always make a joke, like it's like herding cats on a waterbed because they're all over the place. They just need that love and structure and routine. And then they get it. And I used to feel like I loved making that progress with them because there's so much growth in that, you know, when they're 5 years old, there's so much growth. And I thought that was it. Like I thought, I'm never leaving this classroom. And I did. Like I said, it was always scary when I moved to junior high. I was like, I can't do this. And I absolutely fell in love with them. So I think as an educator, if your heart is there, you can be with any group of kids to make a difference in their lives.
What is that transition like? Because for someone like me who doesn't have an education background, and anyone that listens to the podcast consistently hears that from me all the time, and I apologize for bringing it up all the time, but what is that transition like? Because jumping from 4 and 5 year olds in kindergarten to essentially teenagers in middle school, that's got to be a pretty big jump because you're going from teaching kids how to stand in line to preparing them to be young adults. What is that transition like, especially you're not going K-1, 2, 3, kind of growing up with them. You're just making that jump. What is that jump like?
So that jump, it's 2 years, right? We're going to have 2 years with them. So just to try and make the most impact, really teaching them, treating them like young adults, letting them know that their actions, there are consequences for every action, good or bad, and just trying to hold them accountable to their own learning and really having them make that connection that the things that they do and the things that they're learning are going to be beneficial for them, you know, later in life. Junior high is a beast of its own. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kids are in transition, you know, hormonally, physically, but I think that if they're treated with respect and with love, that they will usually perform. So that's what I bring is I love kids for, like I always tell kids when they come in my office, it doesn't matter to me what you have done. If you're honest about it, I will help you. Like I will help you serve your consequence, realize what you did and how it impacted others and talk about how we're going to fix this. So,
and I think that's so refreshing because at least from the generation that I grew up in, it was very like, you did something wrong. You're bad. You're labeled as a bad kid or you fall into like this group and you almost can never dig yourself out of that hole. Cause you know, good kids make bad mistakes and it's, you know, that's why they're a mistake and you learn from it. So to hear that is very refreshing because too many people will almost hold grudges. And even if you're honest, you get punished for being honest.
And I'm a firm believer in that because as adults, we make mistakes. And, you know, I always tell teachers, sometimes teachers get upset with me. That's one feedback, some feedback that I've gotten because I don't immediately go to suspend a kid because I want to talk with the kid. I want, not that there's ever an excuse to be rude or disrespectful, but I want to hear them out. I want them to fully understand what they did because it's so easy to suspend a child, but they come back the next day or 5 days later or 10, however long you suspend them, they're going to come back the same unless you've put some work into it. So that's where I come from is like putting in that work, talking to them. I've already asked here at Milagro, I want the names of some kids that were, you know, in the office a lot because I want to connect with them this summer. I want to just talk to them. like show them that I care and let them know that they're not a bad kid, that yep. they may have made bad choices in the past, but that we start fresh every day.
Yeah. And that reminds me a lot of like a restorative justice kind of approach where it's not about punishment, but it's about growth. And a lot of times these kids, you know, especially if they come from a background of trauma or, you know, depending on how they grow up, they don't necessarily understand what they did wrong or how they could have handled it or sitting back or whatever. And like you had mentioned with middle schoolers, they have so much going on in transition and hormones and all of that, that sometimes they're not thinking straight and they make rash judgments and decisions, and that can lead to poor consequences. So I think it's super refreshing to hear, and especially for a new principal at Milagro, you know, hopefully anyone listening that has a child at Milagro is listening to this and, you know, taking that in for what it is. So with that, let's back up a little bit more. I know we keep kind of moving forward into Milagro. No, it's all good, because I jumped ahead with your time at Largoite. So with when you transitioned into admin, was that a difficult transition for you? Because I know a lot of people, they fall in love with the classroom, they fall in love with the kids, and that transition into admin is really difficult. Was it tough for you?
So it wasn't tough at all. I thought, you know, I can make a greater impact. If I mm-hmm. did this with my class, I could do this with the school. And for a couple of years, you know, you are just pushing through and you're like, oh, I'm going to be this change, right? Mm-hmm. Which is true. But you lose, for me, I see what you're saying. You lose that closeness with your class. Like mm-hmm. I knew every one of my students' names, their parents, the car they drove, their grandparents, mm-hmm. whoever picked them up. So the relationship is different when you're dealing with a whole school. Yes, you know the kids' names, but you don't know them as deep and as intimate as you do when you're a classroom teacher. So I have missed the classroom. And that's the reason, is those relationships that I've built. So that was hard, but I didn't really realize that till I was like 4 or 5 years in, that it's like, hey, like I miss that. I miss that connection with families every day. You know, usually as a principal, you make different calls to the house and your relationship is a little bit different. So that's the thing that I missed, was the relationship piece.
I know you've worked really hard on that though, especially when you were at EJ. Since we made the transition to Remind, I get all the reminds that go out school-wide, and I always saw EJ coming up almost daily, which was great to see for me, because communication with parents is huge. You know, with my background in communication and almost essentially community relations, seeing that you were reaching out to families every day, just letting them know like, hey, we have this coming up, or this, was so great to see, because you knew that families were engaged and you were providing them everything that they could want to be successful for them as parents and for their students. In between, I know you were at Ortiz, and while you weren't the principal there, are there any lessons from your time at Ortiz that you are going to bring to Milagro, or something that you learned while you were at Ortiz that you will now bring with your time here at Milagro?
Absolutely. I think with every experience, you carry that with you, mm-hmm. in good or bad, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you always have with you. I loved my time at Ortiz. I had a great leader to learn from. Felicia Senna was mm-hmm. the principal at the time. Like I said, and still is, yes. And you know, I learned so much from that experience, and learning from her moving from an elementary to a junior high. Like I said, I was in charge of discipline. I was in charge of different things than she was. But for me, the biggest thing was the relationship building with the kids. I loved spending that time with them. So, you know, I'm going to bring with me just the love of that age of kids and really talking to the kids about what they like, right? Because it's always us making the decisions for them. So really allowing them to maybe have a voice and just thinking through how can we make that happen. And, just giving them a voice, I think.
Yeah. Would you say that's kind of one of the, I know you've only known about becoming the principal at Milagro for, you know, a week or so now. So you probably haven't given too much thought to all the things that you want to do while you're here. But would you say that's kind of one of the bigger things that you want to accomplish while you're here, especially in your first year, is kind of giving students a voice and hearing what they want? Because like you had said, the adults tend to make all the decisions for them.
Absolutely. And I'm working with the restorative justice powers that be at the district level. I know they hired a new person, Mariah. She's going to be housed here at Milagros. So I'm super excited about that because I want to do a lot of work with her. We're a communities in the schools school, and we're a community school. So we have a lot of support. I think there's a lot of ideas going around, but I want to hear from the kids. I think that's, you know, getting to know the kids is going to be my priority this year, and the teachers. You know, I want to hear what people think, the positives, negatives, and what they feel needs to change. I know that after speaking with my leadership team, it's about consistency. So, you know, that's going to be kind of the focus, is being consistent, regardless if it's seventh or eighth grade or team A or team B or X or Y, just the consistency across the board and treating kids like little adults.
What are you most excited about for your start here?
Just everything. I mean, I'm on overload right now. Yeah. I've met with like 15 teachers already, so I'm just listening. And so I'm way excited, but I'm also just, like I said, on overload. It's only been a week and I've met with so many people with so many different ideas and so many different wants and needs that I still am in the processing mode, where I'm still kind of just taking everything they've shared with me and thinking, okay, what is my next move, or what am I going to do next? So sorry that I couldn't really answer but I'm like on overload right now and processing.
No, so. I totally understand. So coming from EJ to Milagro, bringing up standards-based teaching and learning, which is the switch that we're making. EJ was a pathway one, which means EJ is going to start with everything next year. Milagro is pathway one. Standards is really exciting across the district, and we've done a few podcasts and I've talked about it with a few people on the show. But I wanted to talk with you about the difference that you think it will make as a principal, both at an elementary school and now at the middle school. What difference standards-based teaching and learning and standards-based grading will make on students, and kind of how, I'm being biased here, but how we think it's going to benefit them, because we do really think that it's going to allow students to understand better and get essentially better grades.
Well, I love standards-based grading, first of all. I think that kids are going to have the opportunity to clearly know what they're learning, why they're learning it, and how we know they're going to learn it, right? So there's going to be clear expectations for them. I think that when kids know what they're doing and what the expectation is, then they can meet that. It's when it's just a lesson and very vague, they don't know. So you go into a class and you say, what are you learning? The kids shrug their shoulders, or they say, we're doing this page, right? So I think with standards-based grading, it's going to be very specific. When you walk into a class, I'm going to be able to ask kids like, hey, what are you learning today? And they should be able to specifically say what they're working on, what skill they're working on that day. That's tied to the standards. So I think, you know, it's going to be clear for the students, and it's going to be clear for parents. I have a student now that is my own child, and he's in high school and he's a straight A student, but I don't know what he knows and what he doesn't know, and I'm an educator, right? I just assume that, wow, he's a 4.0 or 4.4, whatever he is, you know, he's doing great, but I don't know specifically. I know he's not perfect, but I don't know what to work with him at home or what to support him with at home. So I think for parents, it's going to be a little bit more clear. Of course, this first year, I think a lot of educating the parents and the students to be able to talk to their parents about it, but we're in this together. So I think it's really cool because we can reach out to other schools that are doing it and have family nights to really share with parents the importance of this. So
I think that's what I'm really excited about to see, is like the proficiency scale and having the clear target objectives of, if I can do X, Y, and Z, I'm a 3. If I can do X, Y, I'm a 2. And there's clear criteria that you have to meet to be graded. And I use this example all the time, is if I get a B on a paper, and it has a few crosses, it has an X, it has, you know, some red marking on it, and then a B with a circle. What does that tell me as a student? It tells me nothing. I'm a B. Exactly. Yeah. It says, oh, I shouldn't have done that. That word's not right. And that period or comma shouldn't have been there. And with standards, what really excites me is that you really can hone in on what you're good at, what you're not good at, and where you need to put your focus. And executive director of curriculum instruction, Peter McWane, always brings up that people say that they're not math people. And it's not true. It's a mindset.
They don't know math, right? Or they haven't.
Or they don't know what they what they can and can't do. You might be really good at figuring out like regular problems, like 2 times 2. But when you have Johnny has 2 apples and his 2 friends have 2 more apples, how many apples do they have? You might not be good at word problems, but you might be good at doing the actual equation. So now with standards, you might be a 4 at whatever standard that equation is. But when it comes to word problems, you might not be as good. But now you know, well, I'm not good at word problems, so I can focus on this.
Exactly.
I think that's really great. I know it's been a little bit of a transition, and I know you have a story that you tend to use. I've heard it a few times. So if you want to share that, because I think it's a really good kind of description of how standards-based teaching and learning should function and should work.
So the way I explained it to my teachers to try and get them to shift their thinking is, yes, you put in grades, like when you introduce something, a kid might get a D or an F, right? But if you pull small groups and you meet with them and you teach them and they learn it, by the end of the lesson, if they're getting A's and B's, does that kid deserve the F and the D to be averaged in with the A and B? I mean, the end product, if they know it, they know it. So I used the example of their evaluation system. If a teacher's new and she's learning, she or he is learning, and I go in the classroom and it's not that great, and they get a score of maybe a 1 or a 2. And after coaching and getting support from district staff, they are at the end of the year, maybe a 3 or a 4. Should I average in that 1 and 2 at the beginning of the year? I don't think so. So it really shifted for the teachers when I explained it to them that way, because if you know it at the end, you know it. So you shouldn't be penalized for those practice sessions at the beginning. So I love that example for teachers, but I think for parents as well, I think they'll understand it a little bit better. And kids will know like, hey, it's okay to make a couple mistakes, but if I really focus and learn this, then I know that I know it when I can do X, Y, and Z. So
you're focused on learning it and not just doing it.
Right. Yep. A compliance piece.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
Also explaining to them the relevance, right? Why? Why am I learning this? Because a lot of kids say, what do I need this for? Mm-hmm. What am I going to need this for in life?
And so many times too, there's bigger lessons to be learned outside of just what you're exactly doing. The example that I think of that comes to my head is like pre-calc. When you're in like the upper grades, when I was in pre-calc, I was totally the kid that was like, what do I need this for? I'm never going to use pre-calc. I take pictures and videos. Like what is this benefit me? But there is benefit. It's advanced problem solving. It's sequential problem solving. It's some of these other lessons that you don't realize that you're learning. You know, it's not just about solving an equation. It's about how you get to it, how you identify the variable or how you identify this. And that can be transferred to real life. And I think that's where we as students and as people sometimes forget that what we learn in school isn't just, you know, X plus Y equals Z. Absolutely. It's the problem solving that goes into it, identifying certain aspects of the problem or the equation. And that's the real world stuff that you're going to take away. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate the conversation. So to end the episode, I'm going to ask you the question that I've asked all of my guests. What is the best piece of advice or guidance that you have received from a teacher?
I think the best piece of advice would be to keep the passion alive, to continue doing what I'm doing with the heart that I do it with. So